Taylor. I work with an organization called the AIDS HIV Services Group, and we're located in Charlottesville, Virginia. My presentation is on basically finding out information on men who identify as heterosexual but have same-sex relationships. And basically this comes from data that we've collected mostly through HIV prevention, but we were interested in the topic to help us plan HIV prevention. So we did some basically structured interviews with 118 men who have sex with other men who identify as heterosexual. And this is basically the demographics of the group, primarily white, pretty much follows the demographics of our region. The one thing that is higher than most populations is the education attainment. These are the study questions. How do heterosexual MSM define sexual orientation? What are the predisposing, reinforcing, and enabling factors associated with MSM behavior in this population? What are heterosexual men's perceptions about men who have MSM behavior in the general population, and how do these compare to homosexual and bisexual men's perceptions? Limitations to this, it was a single study. It's not been replicated at all. The subject pool, as I said before, is highly educated compared to the general population. Also, you can just say sexual orientation is a social construct and it doesn't matter at all, which would make none of this research worth anything, but just moving on. And by no means do we have any way of verifying the sexual behavior reported by these subjects. We looked at predisposing factors, and some of this is based on literature, so we asked questions about that. But the biggest predisposing factor as far as the correlation was that they actually knew someone who was gay or bi. It gave them access to the population. There's been some research on the so-called gay gene being passed on the mother's side of the family, and that did show up in our in the responses from our population. Also, having older brothers, that the chance of a male in a family being same-sex oriented increases with their birth order. That showed up as well. History of childhood sexual assault was also in there, and that's something that we asked because it's highly related to risk factors with HIV. And particularly under childhood sexual assault, if the mother ignored the report by the son or was involved in the assault, it seemed to especially correlate, or if the assault was a family member. Stranger assault wasn't so much associated in this. Enabling factors, the use of alcohol at the time of the sexual encounter, it was a big one. High sexual drive. Privacy issue, that they actually had a place to do it without being found out. Benefiting financially from the sexual encounter, some of the men in our population were sex workers. And female isolation, either physical or emotional, meaning their female partner was either away or, you know, a lot of these were college students at another school or whatever, or that they were not getting along too well at that time. Reinforcing factors, what made them repeat it. And every man in our study, the condition for being in the study, they had to have had at least two sexual encounters with another male in the past year. So what made them repeat it? The number one was that it felt good. Ease of sex, a lot of the men in this study reported that it was easier to find sex with another male than with a female, particularly on the internet. That it, as long as the encounter was discreet and no one found out about it, that reinforced them doing it again. Money, because a lot were sex workers. That they retained the friendship with the person that they had sex with if they were friends. And that they were able to psychologically deal with the fact. Perceptions in this group compared to a comparison group of 83 bisexual or gay men or self-identifying bisexual or gay men is interesting because there seems to be a lot of normalizing in this particular group. The perception is that among the men in this study who identified as straight, 60 to 70% of them, their perception is that 60 to 70% of all men are MSM, and that 80% of men have been in love with another male. 70% believe that their friends are MSM, and 33% of men in general are either bi or gay. If you compare that with the bisexual and gay comparison group, the numbers are much lower. Other perceptions in this group were that 65% believed that if a male approached them, it meant that they were perceived as feminine. 89% believe that it's a phase that they're going through, they'll grow out of it, and heterosexual behavior will be their only choice in the future. 88% believe that you can get more STDs from men than women, and 73% believe that HIV is mostly a gay disease. The consensual MSM behaviors engaged in the last year, and this does not include the sex workers, it includes the sex workers, but only in non-sex work in relationships, if that makes sense. Oral sex, all of them. 88% performed oral sex on another male. Anal intercourse as the insertive or top partner, 73%. As the receptive or bottom partner, 62%. You see that the unprotected anal sex drops compared to anal sex in general, I think mostly because of the belief that they think that they're going to get infected from a male versus a female. Comparison, and these are all non-sex workers, are factoring out the sex work part of it. Mean number of male partners in this population, but they have 4.5 versus 8.5 women. Repeat male partners, 1.5 versus almost 3 for women. Incidence of unprotected anal sex, the average was less than 1%. Unprotected vaginal sex was over 2%. Incidence of STDs known to be contracted was 0.2% from a male and 3.8% from a female. So this population actually contracted more STDs from females than males, which is kind of interesting. And 10% of them reported an unwanted pregnancy or unplanned pregnancy in the past year. How they define sexual orientation, the men who identified as straight or heterosexual said attraction is the most important thing. If you are attracted and only attracted to another male, that makes you gay or homosexual. Gay or bisexual men said that it was bonding, the ability to bond with another male. And that reverses for the number two. And interestingly enough, all of them said behavior was the last. Some quotes from some of the case files kind of indicate the different mindsets of some of these people that we talked to. This the one about, this is my friend. We have sex because he's gay and he comes on to me. I'm afraid if I turn him down, I'll lose him as a friend. So that's kind of like a coercive type relationship, but he seems to go along with it. It's easier to hook up with a guy than and get sex than with a girl. All you have to do is go online to a chat room, and within an hour, you got sex. When I drink, I get horny. It doesn't matter who I do it with. If it feels good. It feels good. It's just weird that I like it. I would never have a boyfriend, though. And I do it for the money, but it still gets me off. These are from victims of childhood sexual assault. One talks about getting back at his father. And then one says, it's different when I do it with a guy. I like to be physically dominated and forced into stuff, and girls just don't do that right. And I deserve to be treated like a faggot, I guess. I've been treated that way all my life. At least I get paid for it now. Implications for health workers. We found out that, in HIV prevention particularly, there's a lot of stuff out there for MSM, gay men, bisexual men, that doesn't work with this population. So don't use the information that you know about prevention, but don't put a label on it. Use non-gender specific terms in prevention education, such as when you have sex with your partner versus when you have sex with your girl or your guy. Sexual orientation should never be the issue in any prevention. It should be the behavior. Straight MSM may be a gender bridge for STDs. However, in this particular population, it seemed to be that they were being infected by females and infecting males. The strategies that worked best were one-on-one because of the privacy issue. Allow for a client-centered approach. We use comprehensive risk and counseling services, which is a CDC intervention, which is basically one-on-one risk reduction, and that seemed to work the best. Support groups and counseling, particularly for men who have a history of childhood sexual assault. And respect the client's identification. Don't try to get them to admit that they're gay or bisexual. It's non-productive, and it really has nothing to do with what you're trying to do, which is to prevent transmission of HIV. Any questions? Yes. A lot of the clients were already in a prevention intervention, and we asked them if they would participate, and most of them, you know, well, not all of them, but a lot of them said sure. And we had already... We were already in a client counselor situation already, so they were used to what we were asking them anyway. So it was just fill in the blank type thing. Any other questions? Yes. We ask if, for the men who said that they had contracted a sexually transmitted disease in the past year, we ask, do you know who you got that disease from? Most of them would say, well, my female partner notified me that she had chlamydia, so I assumed I got it from her. So it's an assumption, yeah.
But it could have been from them that she got
it. It could have been, yeah.
Not necessarily.
Right. But that's their perceptions versus, yeah. Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to leave some handouts on the table outside since I can't stick around. If you have any questions, just email me. Thanks.
Thank you.